Roni's Own Radio, the award-winning view and interview show with your host, Jeff Roni. So I do a lot of interviews, and there are times in those interviews that there are moments that are just incredible. And this is another one of those interviews. This guy is very interesting, very creative. He's busy. He does a lot of things. He writes magazines. He does a podcast. And he wrestles a lot. He thinks a lot about life and about his beliefs and who he is as a person. So this is a fantastic interview. And first of all, I find out early on in this interview if this guy's name is or is not Lint Hatcher. So this is part one. There's going to be two other parts. And I want to introduce you to Lint Hatcher. Hello, Lint. I'm glad to finally get a chance to talk to you.
Thanks, Jeff.
So, okay, level with me. Is your name really Lint Hatcher?
Yes, although the full name is Joseph Linton Hatcher III. For some reason, my family started calling me Lint, and it stuck, as Lint often tends to do.
When you were younger, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a writer or a comic book artist or both. This was because I loved fictional worlds so much, and yet I knew they were fiction. And the closest I might possibly get to them was creating fiction myself.
When did you finally realize that you loved sci-fi and horror?
My earliest memories of really latching on to sci-fi and horror, as though they were essential ingredients in my mental food pyramid, were, and here comes a lot of stuff. Number one. Somehow, seeing Ray Harryhausen's film Jason and the Argonauts. Could that have been on TV? Not sure. I was completely blown away by the anything-can-happen Dynamation atmosphere of the film, and the skeleton fight scene at the end left me lying unconscious on the floor. Two, picking up copies of Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine down at the Chichester's drugstore in downtown Macon, Georgia. This was during the latter half of Famous Monsters' existence, not exactly the golden years of the publication. You were seeing fewer Basil Gogos covers, unfortunately. But then all of a sudden there was Star Wars everywhere, along with Close Encounters and even Jaws in its creature feature plot structure. That was a pretty exciting time to be a fantasy film fan. Then three, seeing the BBC production of Count Dracula on PBS, starring Louis Jourdan in an amazingly effective portrayal of the Count, and in many strange scenes which are normally left out of film productions, like Dracula crawling bat-like down the outside wall of the castle. Four, also seeing the Prisoner episodes, which PBS broadcast in the States, and getting a feel for the political, esoteric sci-fi it represented. Five, encountering the work of Dan Curtis, both through episodes of Dark Shadows and a drive-in double feature of the two Dark Shadows movies, and perhaps most of all, viewing the made-for-TV film The Night Stalker, which inspired the Kolchak TV series, and which took the logic of vampire movies in a very gut-wrenching, pragmatic direction. For example, the vampire would kidnap his victims and bleed them slowly over several weeks. So it was very chilling. McFarlane Publishing is coming out with a tribute to Dan Curtis, a book, sometime this year, and I'm looking forward to that. He doesn't get the credit he deserves for the contribution he made to horror in the late 20th century. Six, ordering The Shadow Over Innsmouth, a collection of tales by H.P. Lovecraft, through the, of all places, Scholastic Book Club. It got me hooked on Lovecraft big time, which eventually led me to become a subscriber to Whispers Magazine, a small press horror fiction publication by Stuart Davis Schiff, which featured writers like Manly Wade Wellman and artists like Steve Fabian and Lee Brown Coy, and which eventually could be found in local libraries in anthologies named Whispers 1, Whispers 2, etc. 7. Compulsively reading the book series Alfred Hitchcock and the Three Investigators, which often featured a macabre touch here and there. 8. Mail ordering the Gale House Record of the Blood Banshee, attacking a pack of unfortunate kids in a haunted house. And 9. Finally getting such a huge... Finally, 9, getting such a huge thrill from Halloween each year. That's a lot, I know, but I probably left stuff out. Like, number 10, putting together old Aurora Monster model kits.
All right, give me 5 words that describe you.
Oh, brother, I feel like a 6 p.m. action news team. Determined, dedicated, dependable. Let's see. I'm transparent, even when maybe I shouldn't be. I'm sometimes rather conniving. I sometimes feel isolated, especially as a podcaster and not getting responses and so on. But just in general, as a person, I sort of feel isolated. I'm earnest. I'm really trying to do the right thing and to tell the truth, even though I'm at the same time conniving. I guess I'm conniving about trying to get a hold of different kinds of entertainment things, like if there's some comic book that I want to get and I've got $20 for gas, I'm going to try to figure out a way to work that comic book into there and still have enough gas in the car. Christian, that's definitely an upper echelon, one of the words to describe me, and I don't know, how many is that? That's probably enough.
Okay, tell me about Wonder Magazine.
Well, when I first became a Christian, I was totally committed to serving Christ. And I hope to say I still am today. But when I began life as a Christian, it was within a particular cultural context, a mixture of fundamentalism and evangelicalism. Strangely enough, I was not a member of a particular church or denomination because this took place during my college years. What happened was I came to believe in the entire supernatural landscape described by Christian doctrine, the fallen nature of our world, the salvation that comes to us through the birth, death, and resurrection of Christ, the existence of deception through the efforts of demons and of men who were either leading people away on purpose or who were just a bad influence in general, the limited window of opportunity we have to get the message out to people, and the general call to action of the Great Commission, and the reality of engaging in spiritual warfare through prayer, our need to worship God, and on and on. I think a science fiction and horror fan is peculiarly suited to become a total convert, because we can see how the whole thing fits together, just like we can work out the parameters of some fictional universe. The picture I saw was one in which every single effort of my life should be spent on getting the gospel out to people. Just how that was supposed to happen was defined by my cultural context. I could only see certain activities as worthwhile. Handing someone a tract was worthwhile. Painting a picture of a tree was not worthwhile. Writing a song about Jesus was worthwhile. Writing a song about pretty much anything else was not worthwhile. There was a strong line drawn between sacred and secular, between godly and worldly, between what was seen as edifying and worthwhile, and what was seen as non-edifying and a waste of the time God has given us. So my studies in college took a back seat to helping with a prison ministry I'd hooked up with. A struggle developed inside my heart, because I still loved all that stuff I listed previously from the cultural worlds of sci-fi and horror. All of that had meaning to me, but I didn't see how it could possibly fit into the new Christian reality I had come to believe in. This was at about the same time that the first Mac computers came out, and the college got a hold of a few of them, and I worked out a deal to use one of them for personal projects. And the project that came about in a very groping, intuitive way was Wonder Magazine. The first issue cover had a spaceship on it, a knight in shining armor, a rag doll, and other fantasy elements. But the inside was point-blank Christian evangelism. And I took copies to a local comic book store and tried to get the guy there to carry it, and he had to patiently explain to me that the cover might be appealing to his customers, but the insides were not the sort of thing one sold at a comic book store. I was bummed out, but I knew the guy was right. Somehow the two worlds needed to be integrated. I was just slapping a fantasy cover onto a Christian tract. But what I was reaching for was not a kind of fakey evangelical appropriation of fantasy elements, just to use those elements as evangelism tools. That's what I saw evangelicals doing with things like Budweiser commercials. They would take "This Bud's for You" and turn it into "This Blood's for You," and think they had somehow shoehorned a Christian message into the culture around them, when really it was ridiculous Christian kitsch.
Here's just a quick reminder that if you want to continue to get these Roni's Own Radio shows directly sent to either your Google Reader or your iTunes or whatever you use to listen to podcasts, please visit subscribe.roniezone.com, and it's going to give you links and instructions of how to get subscribed and get connected to us so we can send you shows automatically. Thanks so much.
I started working on the next issue of Wonder and met some friends who were in the same boat. A fellow named Rod Bennett, for example, in particular, was a big help. We began working on Wonder in a different direction. Issue 2 was more along the lines of a Screwtape Letters approach, in which there was sort of a fantasy element because angels were talking to each other, and people consider angels fantasy creatures in a certain sense. But even that wasn't quite right, I felt, and I threw that issue away. What we ended up doing was asking ourselves, what would C.S. Lewis write if he went to see Close Encounters of the Third Kind and had to come up with a film review? Or what would Tolkien come up with if he had to do a retrospective on Universal Studios horror films? The Inklings were a big, big influence on us, and they had shown how a Christian worldview could permeate fiction without actually becoming trite propaganda. Well, we wanted to look at our beloved fantasy, sci-fi, and horror culture through a Christian lens. We weren't really doing fiction. We didn't want to just say whether or not this film is okay for Christians to watch and this film is not, because we had this feeling that there were Christian elements all through these fantasy films and fiction, which actually made the films and books interesting, fascinating, even mind-blowing in the first place. For example, it's the Christianity in the background of a Dracula film which gives the film its power, which makes Dracula, by contrast, so evil, and which maps out the entire vampire mythos. If you de-Christianize the vampire film, you end up with something that can be energizing on a gore level, or that might have some interesting social commentary like they did in the Buffy series here and there. But really, the core of the thing, which gives it a gothic depth, is lost. It turns out rather anemic, in other words. So, we began writing about different subjects that interested us and giving them what we called the Wonder treatment, drawing out those elements which provoked awe and wonder, which got us interested in the thing in the first place, and acknowledging those elements and exploring those elements as Christians, but without dissecting so that the thing is picked apart and lifeless. And I think we did pretty darn well, myself. We looked at the early Universal Studios horror films, at Val Lewton films, at 50 sci-fi films, at Ray Bradbury's fiction, at C.S. Lewis, of course, at K. Gordon Murray Kitty Film Imports, at Godzilla, at Ripley's Believe It or Not, at Frank Capra films, especially the darker realities that fuel Capra films, in which people somehow manage to forget about, and they call his films corny, and even at Mystery Science Theater 3000. We never made a dime, but the magazine was a success in that this was all taking place during the zine revolution. And that was when people first got a hold of desktop publishing hardware and software, which allowed them to do their own magazines. And somehow, there was simultaneously several small-scale distributing houses, which had relationships with the big bookstore chains, and which were willing to carry small press zines, like Wonder. So Wonder really got out there, into all sorts of bookstores across the nation, and had a good effect on people, I think, drawing them toward the source, with a capital S, of awe and wonder in the films and books they loved. Or at the very least, pointing out the Christian content or background of the drama in these stories and saying that this content was essential, if only in the sense of good versus evil. So you could explore what is the nature of that good and what is the nature of that evil, and etc.
What was the point that you realized that God really existed?
I first encountered God at a personal level in college. This was all tied into actually seeing Christ at work in the lives of several friends, somehow catching a whiff of that, of what was Christ-like from those people, and then tying that felt, encountered reality to the Jesus I encountered in the Gospels. It brought that Jesus to life for me in a way that had not happened when I was a child. Also, my friends and I worked on a play about St. Francis of Assisi that was a music project for a music major friend of ours. And even though none of us were Catholic, St. Francis's writings, even though there's not that many of them, and his general outlook had an effect on all of us.
What caused you to become a Christian?
I had lived for several years in the atmosphere I just tried to describe among these Christian friends, and I had begun to kind of think I was a Christian in some sense, but my sexual behavior was not in line with Christian teaching, and I was simply ignoring this. Anyhow, people were hurt. I realized I had done things that were deeply wrong, and so eventually, it was a very strong conviction of sin that brought me to my knees, begging Christ to forgive me and to be my Savior.
Okay, here's a big one. How did you bring your love of sci-fi and horror into the belief system of Christianity? Now, somebody told me that you couldn't bring anything fun in the door of Christianity as you came through. Is that true?
Well, what I learned by working on Wonder and investigating various forms of Christianity is culture matters. We all come into this world in the context of a particular culture, or at the very least, we latch on to some kind of culture that serves as the lens through which we see the world. That's just a given. That's part of being human. It's not a bad thing, a blinding thing, or a limiting thing. It's just a real thing, which can be used for good or evil, I suppose. Some of us are alienated from our culture. I was a bit alienated from Southern good old boy culture where I grew up. I didn't fit into that. Where I did find my voice, so to speak, was in the fantasy fan culture that developed around famous monsters of Filmland magazine, the 60s monster craze, which I caught at the very tail end of it, the Star Wars generation, and so on. It's in and through that culture that we learn what is good in life, what is bad, what is noble, what is honorable, what is deceptive, and so on. I learned that sort of thing watching Peter Cushing's Dr. Van Helsing fight Christopher Lee's Dracula. The fact that our culture is feeding us info about the good, the true, and the beautiful is one of the reasons we cling to a particular culture, or we love our culture so much, whatever that culture may be. That's why Christians have to be careful about telling people to abandon their culture when they become a Christian. For example, the evangelical culture I stepped into was shallow water compared to Universal Studios horror films. Cultural systems are made up of powerful symbols, and evangelical culture had tossed out much of Christian symbology out of a fear of Catholicism. But there is a built-in human need to interface with reality via symbols. And so, this is irrepressible. And so the local evangelical bookstore is full of half-hearted attempts to come up with some kind of symbols. But it is usually in the form of grabbing some kind of current mainstream popular culture, like Got Milk commercials, and then adapting that to become Christian, so that it becomes a Got God t-shirt. That's why evangelical culture comes across as inane. It is cut off from the Christian culture that has steadily developed over the past 2,000 years, and it's just picking and choosing this or that from the consumer culture that surrounds us. Even monster movies from the 30s and 40s provide richer culture than that. So to answer your question, God is the God of fun. God is the author of whimsy and silliness and fun. It just comes to us in and through culture, which may not fit tightly framed Christian criteria, especially if that criteria comes from a form of Christianity that is suspicious of symbols, other than very narrowly approved sets of symbols. God is the God of mountains, and we can delight in mountains and their beauty without carving a massive portrait of Jesus onto the side of the mountain. People may have found a lot of delight in their own culture when they came to Christianity, and they should be allowed to hang on to some of that culture because it speaks to them. It's how they've come to understand the world around them. But everyone, I think, will have to deal with a sort of sorting out process of what to keep and what to throw out, what is helpful in the long run and what turns out to be hurtful. That has to do with discernment, and it ain't easy. But the fact that it ain't easy doesn't mean it should be avoided. As Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living.
There is no way we can do what we do on our own. So we often play promos and things like that, and we want you to check out these promos, but also take a second and check out these shows if they really seem interesting to you. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
From around the globe into your living room, it's the Jen and Dave Show. Rabbit trails are our business, and business is good. You can find us at thejenanddaveshow.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Chris.
And I'm Cliff.
And we're Christians. And we've been made into a stereotype of people who just don't enjoy science fiction.
Well, they're just silly.
That's right, Clifford. Us here at The Jesus Geeks, we do mix theology, our love for Jesus, and also our love for everything geeky into a fun podcast.
Wow, that's amazing!
Yes, it is, Clifford. And this amazing podcast can be found at www.thejesusgeeks.com. So remember, everyone, for the latest on entertainment, culture, and the geek lifestyle from a Christian point of view, tune into The Jesus Geeks.
We're the Christian missionaries to the geek culture.
Or we could be the geek missionaries to the Christian culture.
Ooh.
So remember, everyone, if you're a geek-loving Christian out there, check out The Jesus Geeks podcast at www.thejesusgeeks.com.
We're going to end part one of our interview with Lent Hatcher right here, and we're going to come back next time with part two. Thank you for listening to Roni's Own Radio. Please visit our website at jrdonline.com. And drop us an email at jeff.roney@gmail.com. Thank you very much, and see you next time on Roni's Own Radio.